Hi, and welcome to an all-new episode of the DeviantArt Podcast here on Instagram Live. And we're live. I'm your host, Matt Buholtz. You may know me as GG Matt B, and today we've got an amazing show for you. Our special guest today, you may know him. He's a New York Times best-selling illustrator. He's worked with Marvel, Disney, Dungeons & Dragons, Warner Brothers, and he's also known for being the person who started the online challenge Inktober. We have got the one and only Jake Parker, so let's bring him in right now. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's really exciting to have you on the podcast live. And one of the things I want to talk about today is you're actually the guest judge and special example artist for a program we're running right now, the Original Character Challenge. It's the third iteration, and this one is Radical Racer. So what's it been like being a part of that process as we kind of get near the end of the submission period?
I've really enjoyed it. You guys approached me and DeviantArt approached me and said, hey, we've got this character art challenge, and you showed me examples of past challenges, and the artwork was incredible, and the the character designs that I saw before was incredible, and it was like, oh, this is going to be such a fun thing to like sink my teeth into. And then when you said it was racing, I was like, I've always been a fan of different kinds of races, motorsport type of things. So this is my chance to really like explore that world and create something racy, you know. So if you look at my example, the piece that I made, it definitely has a foot firmly planted in traditional like motorsports. I looked at a lot of reference of, you know, 70s, 80s Formula One racers, looked at motorcycle racing, and and then infused it with a little bit of like, I would say 70s sci-fi, definitely like Star Wars sci-fi.
Yeah, it's got some Star Wars. It's got a little bit of like Speed Racer, which I'm not sure if it's just the content shaping my perception of it, but it's very like, got a lot of that like fun group dynamic around how you presented it. You even built out like a full crew, like a pit crew.
Yeah, I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop. I wanted to make like a poster for it, almost like if this was a movie poster or something you'd see, you know, advertising the race, if you look at old like racing posters. And if you look at any like movie poster, there's going to be a cast of characters there. You have your main character, and then you have a handful of other ones. And so I figured he needs like some sort of pit crew, some sort of mechanic, and he needs some sort of like a manager or a team captain or something like that. I forget what it's called. Yeah.
So when one of the challenges that is kind of around this is like, this is one of the first original character challenges we've done that has been, there's someone, and then also like their vehicle or racing device or something. So there's almost two characters being developed, the actual racer and then their mode of transportation, I think is what we called it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fun too. Like I actually designed the vehicle first before I even thought about the character. Because I interpreted racer as being the vehicle. And then like pilot or driver would be the character. Right. And so I was thinking like, okay, this time around, you know, I'm going to focus more on this craft that they're racing in. And then I designed the character to match that.
How do you think that your character, Caesar, was shaped by the vehicle that you made?
Not so much like more so in like his aesthetic, right? So the design of the vehicle is very, there's a utilitarianness to it. And it's, you know, in my headcanon for this story, right, is that these vehicles might've been originally designed for military purposes. And that's why they look so bulky. And then they've been repurposed for actual racing things. And so his outfit, you know, could have subtle like fighter pilot aesthetic to it, sort of that sort of design language that you'd see there, mixed with racing, and then I just thought it'd be cool to, like, I live in Arizona, we're on the border with Mexico, and the Baja races that happen down there and stuff, and I thought it'd be cool to make, you know, the character Mexican and have that sort of be a part of his, you know, racing be a part of his heritage as well. So it all just kind of came together.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like how so many different aspects of the world that you built actually shaped the design of your characters down to what they're wearing or, you know, their aesthetics. So when you're creating around something like the OCC, one of the things that we really enjoyed with the program was we kind of built out, you know, you have your mode of transportation, you have your character, you have a lucky charm and a trick. So it kind of gave these different pieces that someone had to build out to give a more full-fledged character. How do you think that that compares to like being a professional artist and what sort of work you might receive for clients? Do you think that there's kind of like a one-to-one there or something that people can take away from this sort of competition?
Yeah, I mean, this did feel very much like a freelance job I would get from, you know, Nickelodeon to do a character design or when I worked in feature animation, you'd get a design brief and say, okay, here's our character, here's what they need to do in the film, so here's what we need. And all that extra stuff, like the secret trick, the special trick, the lucky charm actually really helped me flesh out this character more, because normally when I design a character for personal use, I'm thinking more, how does this character fit into the story? And then I'm finding objects and things related to them that help the story. But with this ask to have these particular things need to be a part of it, it was sort of backwards for me. Like, I don't know what the story is. I just have these elements that I need to then shoehorn into a story. And so that was kind of cool. And I think it made the characters a little bit richer. I wouldn't have, you know, as I was sitting there thinking, what is this character's lucky charm? I went through all different kinds of, there's a Formula One racer who puts a coin inside the shoelaces on his shoe, right? And he does that and I was thinking, okay, a coin would be cool. That's kind of hard to explain. I was thinking, you know, it could be like a toy that he keeps on the dashboard or a bobblehead or something like that. And as I kept digging and thinking, no, that's not right. That's not working. I thought it needs to be connected to, like, maybe this thing needs to be connected to who he is and to his past. Like, why would this be a lucky charm? And that's when I started thinking about, okay, maybe his dad was killed in a race and he's racing to prove, you know, to bring honor to the family or to prove that he could be the racer that his dad wasn't, or maybe, and then this came to me, you know, his dad had this ring and for some reason he didn't wear it the day that he died in the crash. And so Caesar's like, oh, that ring's lucky. You know, if you don't wear it, you crash. So he always carries it with him. He puts it, you know, wears around his neck like a necklace. And that was the story behind it.
Yeah, it's really interesting how much can be built from such a small thing and how much that extrapolates out into the world around everything. And it's kind of been fun going through, like, we won't mention any specific pieces because we don't want to show preference, but like, it's been real interesting kind of imagining which ones could live within that same world, or are they all racing against each other even,
I always imagined this being as not necessarily they all have to be like motorcycles, but wouldn't it be cool if you raced, you know, a flying vehicle against a land vehicle against, you know, some sort of crawling vehicle, and the actual race itself, if we're going to, you know, build this out to as far as we can go, you know, it could be that you're in a wheeled vehicle, but that's a longer route. And if you have a crawling vehicle, you can actually like climb over obstacles, you know, so it might be slower on the road, but faster, in other ways. So, yeah, it's fun. It's just, there's so many possibilities here. And I keep thinking like, oh, I should develop this further into like a graphic novel or something.
Well, you actually have a story around Skull Chaser, and he's got like his own sort of vehicles and stuff too. So
Right.
This is kind of fun coming back almost to like a vehicle driven character.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because I do love vehicle design. I love doing that. And I always like, any sort of comics project I've done the Missile Mouse graphic novels. I've done Rocket Raccoon graphic novels. I've done stuff with Skull Chaser. I've done Skyheart, which is another graphic novel. I'll just grab a.
Yeah, pull them up.
It's a self-published comic that I made a couple of years ago. But one of the key things in this is like vehicles play a role. And I often look at vehicles as like being, where is it? I got a picture of one right here. I look at vehicles as being a character in and of themselves. If you think about the Millennium Falcon or Luke's X-Wing, right? Like these are so iconic and they're such a integral part to Star Wars that they should be treated as, you know, as their own sort of character and not as background, you know, not as like garnish.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting too, if you look at like the relationship, at least in fiction, of pilots or drivers with their vehicles or even ship captains, they speak of them as if they are a character. They have their own personality, their own drive, their own like characteristics almost of like, oh yeah, well this one can't turn like this, you know, or she's not as fast as she used to be, you know, that they speak of them with this like soul and with this sort of like personality,
which was one of my favorite. I mean, this is a 3-year-old movie, but Solo, the Star Wars story, I love that element of the Millennium Falcon, how they actually like gave the Millennium Falcon a brain.
Yeah,
right. It is a character, and I just think that's cool. It's a little morbid, like that character's trapped in there forever, but yeah, it's cool.
So,
love that movie.
How do you think that you added that sort of personality to the vehicle that you designed for the Radical Racer original character challenge piece?
I actually wanted to add a little bit more personality to it, and I felt like I did leave some personality on the table.
That's the challenge with art. It's never finished.
It's never finished.
You always have that thing that you want to add.
Yeah. That thing, it is, I mean, because I decided to do very hard angles to it, that gives it like this, like I said, a utilitarian like personality. Mm-hmm. It looks rough and formidable. And then giving it like the paint job that I did, which is a little bit more colorful and flashy, and it has its roots in racing. There's racing colors that it's patterned after. That I tried to give a little bit more personality that way, but I think, you know, if I had another couple days to work on it, I would have gone in and the reason I just didn't do this is this does take time, but I would have gone in and figured out, you know, 4 or 5 different sponsors that I could slap their stickers on this side, and coming up with a logo for a fake sponsor like that, you know, that's an hour, that's 2 hours of work right there. And then to just stick it on there. And I just had to finish, but if I had more time, I would have done the sponsorships stickers on there. I would have added maybe a little more damage to the bike, have it look like it's seen some wear and tear.
That's cool. So I don't want to focus too much just on the OCC, but I'll hit one last thing. It does end July 22nd for people who want to submit. And I've seen a lot of comments both on the post and in the chat even right now of people saying like my art isn't good enough to be in this. And one thing that I just really want to hammer home is with this program, it was important to us and important to Jake that like it's about the creativity too. There's actually a full vertical that is just for original ideas, where artistic execution isn't weighted as heavily. So no matter what your skill level is, there's a part where you can be creative and really show off your great ideas and still be rewarded for that and get some tools like a Wacom Cintiq 22 that will help you continue with your artistic journey and continue growing. So lots of opportunities.
I just want to add there too, like you shouldn't, like to win a contest is not the reason you should enter a contest. Mm-hmm. To enter a contest or any sort of art challenge, you know, like Inktober or, you know, these different month-long art challenges, it should be for self-improvement and for really like pushing you to do something you wouldn't have done otherwise. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you're missing out if you think, oh, look at all this good art. I'll never be that good. I'll never win the Wacom Cintiq. I'll just not do it. And that means that there's a week's worth of drawing improvement that you could have spent working on something and making something unique and pushing yourself that you wouldn't normally have done because you're denying yourself this opportunity. So
yeah,
I would just reframe your mindset around that. And what will happen, I mean, there's a lot of people whose skills aren't good enough, but they'll never get good enough if they keep denying themselves opportunities like this to work.
And to help encourage that too, like the rules and regulations of this, anyone who submits maintains all rights to the characters they submit. Like none of that is owned by anyone else. You get to retain that. So if you create something that you're like inspired by, you can continue to develop that without worrying about any sort of ownership being taken away from you by the company. Like these character challenges are all about that improvement, all about that exciting stuff. And speaking of challenges to improve, I want to talk about Inktober because
Inktober,
like almost a little over a decade ago now, which is crazy.
Yeah.
You came up with the idea for Inktober and you started that. What was going through your mind when you were like, hey, I'm going to start working on ink and I'm going to take a month to do it.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, the story goes, a friend of mine, I was working at an animation studio, a friend of mine was drawing with this pen he got in Japan. I really liked the line work he was doing. It was a brush pen. And I had experimented with drawing with an actual ink, a brush, dipping it in ink. I'd experimented with that years ago. And I liked it, but I wasn't very good at it. And the dipping in the ink was just, it's messy and it takes a long time. And so I kind of tucked that away and I went to technical pens. But here he shows up with this brush pen. I'm like, this is really cool. It's not messy. You don't have to re-dipping it. It's got an actual brush tip to it. So it gets that same effect. And I asked if I could borrow it and I messed around with it. I did a drawing. And I was like, okay, I want to get good at this. At the same time, there's like these 30-day health challenges happening. And a lot of friends were doing that too. Like there's like P90X. They're doing 90-day, like get in shape and you know, a 30-day cleanse and stuff like that. And I was thinking, why not combine that sort of 30-day regimen to drawing? And I essentially, like, there's constraints and there's accountability. And I think those two things kind of fire up creativity when you have these constraints to work within. And then also when you're accountable to somebody. Otherwise, you know, there's nothing pushing you to finish and you can give yourself, if you're just accountable to yourself, you can give yourself as many breaks, you know, as you feel like you need. But when other people are counting on you, then you're going to do it. So I announced that I was doing this challenge as a form of accountability. And the constraint was I'm just going to work in ink because I wanted to get better in ink. And that was like the genesis of it. And I did it for 30 days. This was before, you know, maybe Twitter had 300,000 users, so I wasn't really on Twitter. Nobody was.
At that time, there was no art
Twitter. Yeah, people were kind of doing Facebook, but nobody was posting art on Facebook. And really, artists were posting art on forums. They were posting art on DeviantArt. They were posting art on blogs. And that's where Inktober existed, was me posting on my blog. And year after year, I kept doing it. I kept posting it. And as I shifted from posting on blogs to posting on social media, and just the nature of social media being so things can go viral a lot easier.
Yeah.
It started to grow. And then do you remember when people didn't know what a hashtag was?
Do I ever? working in social, I remember seeing it all.
Being like, how does this work? And I thought, oh, I'll just start hashtagging my drawings with the hashtag Inktober. Mm-hmm. And so once people could click on a hashtag Inktober and see 100 different Inktober drawings, everybody started posting theirs. And really from like 2015 on, it just this exponential, like huge growth happened.
Yeah. I'd love to see in the chat, if you guys have taken part in Inktober, let us know. Let us know how many years. Let us know if you've made it all 31 days or if you're doing Inktober 52. I saw someone mention that they were doing that currently.
That's cool.
So that's exciting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love seeing all the people talking about Inktober and like the kind of the challenges. I saw someone say, and I'm sorry for missing in the scroll, that they did it even through, they were in college last year and it was an extra challenge. So congrats on making it through that.
Cool. Good job.
How do you find that ink, like I've worked a little with ink brush pens myself. How do you find that that changes your artistic style or what comes out of your hand almost while working with ink?
So I used to be very, my drawings used to be very like rigid and technical and crisp. Mm-hmm. There was just there's almost like an inorganicness to them, right? Mm-hmm. And every line was very controlled and it was just labored over. So I liked thick and thin lines, but to get that with like a Pigma pen, you've got to go over the line several times until you build it out to the size that you want it to be. And with a brush pen, you can just do a line and you get the thinnest thin and the thickest thick, you know, with one stroke. And so I liked that because it was more efficient. And at that time, you know, I had a lot of young kids. I had a full-time job. I only had a certain amount of time each day. I gave myself basically an hour mm-hmm. to do like personal drawing time every day. And I wanted to have something finished within that hour. And the brush pen really made that possible. So it made it easier to do something finished in a short amount of time. But then I also found that my drawings became a little bit more fluid, a little bit more organic. Like there, you can see the artist's hand in there. And I really like that.
Yeah. There's such a magic to it where sometimes stuff happens because of that slightest pressure change that you don't even anticipate. And it makes all the difference.
And that too, like I work digitally all the time. I love working digitally and I ink digital as well, but what I find when I'm using digital is it actually takes longer because I know I can fix everything, right?
Yeah.
So if a line's wrong, go back, control Z, fix it. Wrong again, control Z. And I'll do 30 lines before I get that curve just right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm working with a brush pen, if it is a little bit off, I normally would do control Z if it was digital, but I'll just keep it. And I like my traditional ink drawings better because there's a wonkiness and a weirdness mm-hmm. to some of the lines that you don't get in digital.
That imperfection and lack of ability to change. Like I remember my junior high art teacher cut like all the pencils in half so there were no erasers. And it was all about like embracing your mistakes, you know.
That's cool. That's a good exercise. Yeah.
But so with Inktober becoming so big and the evolution of like even Inktober 52, how have you found that shapes people's perception of you as an artist? Do they relate to you as the Inktober guy? Do they expect these inks of you versus your earlier works? Or
what's interesting, there was a time period there where I was really uncomfortable being the Inktober guy because it's always been like a side project.
Mm-hmm.
And I was this graphic novel artist and I was this, person who worked in animation and I self-identified career-wise and artistically with that. Mm-hmm. And I realized at some point, at some point I'm going to die. I'll pass on. And if, you know, someone were to read the Wikipedia article on me, and all it said was he was the creator of Inktober, I'd be okay with that. Whereas there's a time period, it's like, no, why bring that up when I'm, you know, I want to be this person who's known for their comics that they've made, and this person who's known for, you know, these films that they've worked on or whatever. So that's been like my weird psychological like adjustment to this. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with it now. I don't care. I've embraced Inktober. And it's been, I think the reason that my followership is so high, you know, is because of this challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see my art as being, you know, nearly as good as some of these other amazing artists out there. And I look at all these artists and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I'll never be that good. I've reached a level of proficiency where I'm comfortable with it. I'm happy with it, but there's so much more to do and to explore and things to figure out. And I really think that this challenge kind of helped put me in people's way and in people's, you know, feeds mm-hmm. that wouldn't have normally happened.
Yeah.
Outside of that,
there's a lot of good exposure that can come from online challenges as the creator or even someone else submitting to it. Like that's kind of what you're talking about earlier with those hashtags.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too. Like, and every year I get people who have done the challenge for all 31 days and they'll come to me and say, I've gotten so much better. I couldn't believe that I could improve this much in this short amount of time. So that was one thing. They'll say, I haven't had this much fun drawing, you know, I haven't drawn for myself in such a long time. And so this was like really good for me to like just cut loose and be free with ideas and things like that. But then they also say like, I got so many new followers from doing this daily posting mm-hmm. and the algorithm favors that daily mm-hmm. posting. And so a lot of people have, and I followed people that I found through Inktober, you know, so it's a good way to improve your skills. It's a good way to get a little bit more exposure and it's a good way to just, create things that you wouldn't normally create.
Yeah. Something you touched on real quickly there that I want to hit is how do you find time to make art for yourself as a mm-hmm. professional artist? How do you kind of find that balance between what you do for you and what you do for others?
Yeah, well, right now I am completely imbalanced. I don't do much for myself. At least it seems like this year, it's been so focused on doing work for other projects and paid work and things like that. But the reason I really liked doing this original character challenge was this was a chance to do something for myself. It was like I didn't feel guilty like taking away time from other projects to do something really for myself. So there's that. Normally, though, under normal circumstances, when I'm sort of in charge of my schedule and I'm not overcommitting to things, I will carve out a couple hours at the beginning of the day before I answer email, before I do anything, and just work on whatever I want to work on. And once I've done that, then I can go off and do the other stuff. And the reason I do it first is because all the stuff that, there's two ways to look at things. There's the things that are important, and then there's the things that are like noisy, the things that are like screaming at you, like, I've, you know, get me done, right? And mm-hmm. oftentimes those aren't the same thing. So like email is this thing that's noisy. It's like, hey, your inbox is full. You got to answer me. But spending 5 hours doing email all day isn't important work. It's not going to lead to anything long lasting.
Yeah.
But spending 2 hours drawing something for myself, I created something. I maybe added something to a universe I'm building. I have a piece of artwork that I could sell later on. I have something that I can turn into a sticker or a t-shirt or make a print out of. And so it's just important to like make time for the important stuff.
Yeah. And going back to the OCC original character challenge, I saw Wacom join the chat. So thanks Wacom for popping in here and saying hi.
Hi Wacom.
They also say that they found a lot of artists through Inktober. So awesome. Cool. Again, another reason to participate in community challenges like Inktober, get that exposure. and find ways to improve and show a variety of your work. Like 31 days is a lot of opportunities to show growth, show range, show whatever you wish.
That's true.
So one of the things with Inktober is as it's grown over the past 11 years, it's obviously become a bigger and bigger thing. And there's a little bit of a challenge that you had this past year of trademarking that and like trying to work with that and find ways to grow it. And I'd love for you to be able to talk about that a little bit, because I know that there was some confusion around that and some like even just growth of a personal brand that people would really benefit of knowing from.
Right, right. So as it grew and as it got bigger and as more eyes were upon it, sponsors started reaching out to me saying, we want to sponsor Inktober. I also would receive word that like art stores, art chains would be using Inktober to sell their products. They'd be using the actual Inktober logo that I made. And so my advice that was given to me early on by my agent, my literary agent, she said, whenever you use the Inktober logo, the logo I designed, she said, just put a little TM next to it. And that's sort of you planting your flag in the ground that says, this branding I own, and I'm sort of staking my claim on it. And she said, until you actually register it, that sort of will work in a court of law. So you could say to someone who's using my logo to sell a t-shirt, you could say to them, hey, you can't sell that t-shirt. I created that logo.
Right.
Please take that thing down. And so that's really where it went. So back in 2018, I had the money, which it's expensive, to register the logo and the name, the word Inktober that I came up with. And so that just gave me the ability to, if somebody was using it without my permission and using it to sell merchandise or to promote things in their store, I could say, hey, you need to ask for permission first, or you need to pay for a license to use that or something like that. And so that's just essentially the necessity of that.
Right. Yeah.
And then I think the confusion happened was, and my error was not realizing how public I needed to be with that decision, and just some miscommunication between me and artists and my lawyer, and how to enforce this thing. And right. So there's lots of artists who were using the logo and using the word Inktober to sell artwork and to sell their book collections. And I was able to contact each one of these people. Initially, they were contacted by Amazon to take it down. It was very aggressive, and it used all these like big words that were like, we're going to take your money back and you owe us and all this stuff. And I had to reach out to all those and asked whoever did get a note like that to reach out to me so we could
fix it,
clear this up.
Yeah.
And essentially the guidelines is, if you've created artwork for Inktober, it is your artwork, sell it, make a book of it. It's completely yours, but don't title the book Inktober and don't use the logo that I created. Title the book. And here's my advice. Like, so many of these books were titled Inktober or my Inktober drawings. And there's a thing about artists, and artists kind of get this wrong a lot. It's that they latch on to fan art. They latch on to these challenges that other people have created. And by doing that, they're helping to grow these other things instead of growing their own personal brand. And if you really want to succeed as an artist and get the jobs that you want to get the exposure that you want to get, you need to be doing everything you can to reinforce your own personal brand as an artist. And so my advice to them was, instead of titling your book My Inktober Drawings, title it your name, like the drawings of Matt, Matt's drawings, and then subtitle it drawings I made for Inktober, drawings I made for Inktober 2020 or something like that. You can use Inktober in the subtitle, but someone should pick up that book and think, oh, this is something that Matt created,
right?
Not something that Jake Parker created and that Matt's sort of like
tagging
onto, right? And so that's the whole purpose of that, is is do what you can to grow your own brand. Inktober is completely free to participate in. I don't own the hashtag. You can't own a hashtag. I didn't register a trademark on the hashtag. But the registration was just, again, just for the logo design and to use the word in certain marketplaces.
Yeah. Well, it's good to know that, because I know that you're such a community focused person that, mm-hmm. you know, being able to explain that on a public platform, you know, is hopefully helpful to people watching, and that direction to help them define their own brand is right. probably very helpful too, because
right.
it's, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing challenges or fan art or whatever to help with that exposure, help with your growth. But mm-hmm. if ultimately you want to do art as a living, developing your own stuff as well and branding yourself so that you can have that elevation is important.
Right. I mean, fan art has, I've done tons of fan art.
Yeah.
And it's been good. It's been good to, like, you know, someone who's a Optimus Prime fan, their ears are going to perk up when they see an Optimus Prime drawing and, oh, you know, this is a really cool drawing that Jake did. Let's see what other work he's done. Oh, he's done all these other things. That's mm-hmm. cool. I'll follow him. Right. But there's a danger there where if you do too much fan art and all you're creating is fan art, there's nothing you actually own. And I know artists who have gone this route. I'm creating fan art and I'm going in this direction. And they've actually been hired by Marvel or by DC because yeah. they love their fan art. Mm-hmm. And that's great. Now you're working for Marvel and DC, and that's a totally valid path. But still, at the end of the day, you're at the mercy of Marvel and DC. And they might say, like, oh, we just don't have any more work for you. We like this other artist better. And then you have nothing to fall back on because there's nothing you've created on your yeah. own. So I'm just a big proponent for making your own brand, making your own IP, and doing what you can to put it out there, and supplement it with fan art, supplement it with doing challenges and doing these other community things, but always be working on your own stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of working on your own stuff, I know you've got a new book coming out very soon.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
tell us a little bit about that.
It's called Inktober All Year Long. It's your indispensable guide to drawing with ink. And I actually don't have a copy yet. It comes out in 2 months.
It's that new.
Yeah. It's September 15th is the day. But you can go on Amazon. You can type in Inktober All Year Long. And this book is essentially like a guide to being creative and a guide to living creatively through drawing. And so there's a big section on just my thoughts on how to be more creative, my thoughts on drawing. There's a big section on how I actually draw, like my methods and my tips and tricks on inking and drawing and creating a drawing. And yeah. then there's a specific section on how to do the Inktober challenge. Like a prompt shows up, you know, say the prompt is I, you know, the prompt for the day is I. How do you do the most creative thing you can do with that? Is it just you draw an eyeball? You know, that's like level one thinking. Mm-hmm. What if you took it to level 10 and you created a monster covered in eyes and a character's writing on the top of them and you called it an iPod, right? So you threw a pun in there as well. And now you created something really unique and interesting and nobody's seen before.
Which
and
that's pun's pretty much the highest level of art.
It is. It really is. So, but the book goes into that. Like, how do you think beyond the prompt and how do you build something? Create something, draw something that's really unique.
That's cool. And you said that's coming out in about 2 months.
September 15th.
All right.
You can pre-order it now.
Just in time for Inktober.
Yeah.
You'll have it ready to go. So as this isn't your first book, though. You've worked on plenty of stuff in the past. So with each new book that you make, how does that process change for you? Or like what sort of things do you see that like maybe you want to improve on or that you...
Yeah. That's a good question, because I've done graphic novels, I've done children's books, I've done art books, self-published art books, and with each book, I learn something new. I either learn how to make the process more efficient, mm-hmm. Where I can finish it faster. I also try to push myself, like I try to push design or techniques a little further each time.
Yeah.
So every book project is just an opportunity to grow a little bit more to like improve my craft.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what I'd love to roll into now is we've had a ton of questions coming through the chat. Our producers have been pulling those for us. Let's do a little Q&A. You guys can still ask questions now if you'd like. We're still pulling these, but I want to get through some of the ones that we've already pulled. This one, I'm not just pulling this because of the username, but they say, my dream is to become an animator. Do you have any insight on how I can do that or how to be better? And that's from Taco Time on Tuesday.
Okay. Taco Time on Tuesday. And this advice is going to apply to anybody who wants to be anything artistic, right? I would be as specific as you can with what you want. And I would be very open with that as well. So an animator is very broad. There's 2D animation. There's 3D animation. There's 2D animation for television. There's 2D animation for video games. There's 3D animation for television, for video games, for film, right? So there's just a broad swath of animation. So figure out what's the exact kind of animation that you want to do. Let's say it's you want to do 2D or you want to do 3D animation for feature film, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good, solid job. It pays six figures. You get benefits. I would definitely recommend getting into that gig. It's also really hard to get into because it's very competitive, but there are avenues to get there. And one of the first things I would do is go to the 5 most recent animated films that have come out, go to the credits, and when the animators come up, write down all the names. Pause it, write down all the names. Go online and find them on Twitter, find them on Instagram, and follow them all, and just start engaging with them and talking to them and commenting on their posts. This word is networking. It's what it's doing, but it's also making friendships and making connections. And if any of them are receptive and responsive to that, go in and say, hey, in 5 years or in 2 years or you know, in a certain amount of time, I don't know how old you are, but I would like to be working in animation. I'd like to be doing the job you did. Mm-hmm. What did you do to get there? How did you get there? And they're going to have very specific advice on how to do that. And some of it might be a certain amount of schooling you need to take. There might be some online resources that you could do. But I would do that. And while you're doing all of this, go online to YouTube, go online to these different, online schools and just type in how to animate and learn everything you can and get the software that you need to start doing it.
Yeah. So I've seen a couple questions that we can answer really quickly that are regarding the original character challenge and both that and Inktober. Can they submit with digital and traditional? Yes. Like that's a very easy answer. Several of you have asked that. So you can submit to the OCC with digital and traditional. You can submit to Inktober with digital and traditional. There's a lot of stuff that you can do, and art is art.
Right.
So one person, Arjun Vail, says, how do I process creative intake and put it to use in my art?
Okay, so processing it, all creativity is connecting dots. And you know, the better you get at connecting dots that people aren't used to connecting, the more creative your stuff is going to be, right? Mm-hmm. So the key is to get as many different kind of dots collected. And what is a dot? A dot is experiences, both indirect and direct, right? Mm-hmm. So the more experiences you have in life, and this is either through indirect experiences like watching movies, reading books, being well-read, being well-watched, you know, I wouldn't say playing hours and hours of video games, but being very aware of video games and what's going on in that realm. All these sort of indirect things, going to museums, going to Broadway shows or off Broadway shows, like anything creative that people are making things, soak that in. And then through direct experiences, if you have the ability to travel, mm-hmm. even if you don't have the ability to go to a different country, go to a different state or go to a different city, or just explore the city that you live in, get out of your house and look around and pay attention and see what things are doing. And just start collecting these experiences, talk to different people, get out of the bubble that you're in. If you're finding yourself agreeing with a lot of the people that you have conversations with, then you're not getting exposed to enough different ideas, right? Mm-hmm. And so once you have collected all these different dots, start connecting them, put things together that you wouldn't think to put together or make no sense to put together, and figure out how they work. So that's my advice there. I call it the creative bank account. Like you're filling it, you know, all these experiences, you're filling this account. And then when you want to create something, you have to make a withdrawal. If you don't have enough capital, creative capital in there, you can't create something.
Yeah. This is Brenda says, oh my gosh, it just disappeared. This is Brenda says, the top skills you should have or master to be a character designer. So what are three top skills you think a character designer should have?
A good understanding of like anatomy, mm-hmm. How to draw the figure. I would say a good understanding of just basic design principles, like how shapes go together, you know, what different shapes mean when you use them. And then just an understanding of the craft of like, how do you make something, how do you render something appealingly? Like understanding the tools of Photoshop and the different brushes. If you're working traditionally, just knowing how to use those tools, ink pens or pencils or paints or whatever.
Awesome. Chicken Fisher wants to know, what do you enjoy most working on as an artist illustrator?
I love drawing comics. I do. They're the hardest thing. They just make my brain turn to mush by the end of the day. But I love holding a finished comic in my hand and being like, this is an actual, you know, it's almost like you've created life when you create a comic, because there's characters talking, they live in a place. You know, they're interacting, something happened, the characters have grown and changed, and that's just super rewarding to have that.
All right, guys, sorry about that. It looks like it cut us off a little bit early, but just to wrap things up, just want to give an extra thank you to Jake Parker, who joined us on the podcast live, which we just put up. It'll be out on IGTV, but just wanted to say goodbye to everyone. Thank you for tuning in to that earlier stream. Hopefully you got to catch it. Instagram, a little bit of a technical thing where I just cut it, but make sure to enter the DeviantArt Original Character Challenge 3 Radical Racer. You have until July 22nd to submit your characters for a chance to win one of three Wacom Cintiq 22s and other amazing prizes. So do that. Don't forget that there are different verticals, so you can win for the best overall art, the most creative art, or art that fits kind of into Jake Parker's style that he will be judging himself. So hopefully you enjoy, and thank you again for tuning into the podcast, and sorry that it cut us off a little bit early. Hope that you guys have a good one.